Dissonance Media and the Other Stories presents. Step into the abyss of After the Gloaming, a gothic fiction podcast that delves into the depths of human emotion. Unyielding love, revenge, internal struggles, and restless souls await you in 9 haunting episodes, where dread, fear, and rare glimpses of eerie happiness linger. Dare to listen on your favorite podcatcher? After the Gloaming beckons. Search now, but beware. Innocence will be left behind.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
These aren't the stories your mother told you. No. These are the other stories.
I went to the wrong party last week. I wore my favourite trousers, my gorgeous shirt, my lucky socks. But the one thing I didn't bring with me was my own mask. I must have turned left when I meant to turn right, because I found myself in a locked storage room. The floor was concrete and somewhere something was dripping, and I thought maybe I could hear chains dragging, but I couldn't see them. It was freezing down there, smelled like cold rain on a hot day, and I must have gotten lost again because I came upon a set of stairs that led deeper into the ground. I walked until I heard the music and thought, the party. I made it. But upon entering and walking through drawn red velvet curtains, I found myself surrounded by people in suits and dresses and masks. They were dancing and spinning and whispering. And though I thought they were my friends at first, I quickly realized that they were not. When I turned to leave, they blocked the exit. Still dancing, still whispering. And they came to me with a mask of my own and pressed its coldness to my face. And now I'm dancing. And now I'm spinning. And now I'm whispering. Whispering for someone to help me. For someone to make it stop. Can you hear me? Through the curtains, the door, the stairs, the concrete, and the wrong directions. Can you help me? If you answered yes, then here's how you can do it. You can listen to volume 95 of The Other Stories, Masks, Part 2. Our first Masks volume was way back in December 2019. I was practically a baby at that point. And Part 2 is happening right now as I record this in April 2024. Where does the time go? This month we have stories of masks, both literal and figurative, weird and scary, and one that's also kind of cute in a bloody way. Scratching words on the walls this month, we have writers Jay Wolf, Matt McBride, Alex Dal Piaz, Gustavo Bondo, and Georgia Cook. And singing from the depths of a giant floating whale, we have narrators Matthew Lloyd-Davies, Josh Curran, Erica Ventura, James Barnett, aka Jimmy Horace himself, and Georgia Cook. And toiling away at the air fryers of hell itself, we have producers Carl Hughes, James Barnett, aka Jimmy Horace, and Duncan Muggleton. If you enjoy what we do, be sure to become a TOS Plus member. This way you'll get access to the premium feed, which includes exclusive content, ad-free, early access, high-quality audio, and community fun times, if you're into that sort of thing. And you'll be supporting your favourite weekly weird fiction podcast. More info can be found at theotherstories.net/plus, or just go and subscribe either via Apple's premium podcast service or Patreon. Speaking of patrons, we have two new superpowered patrons. So prepare to taste the rainbow, smell the dream, and welcome to the superpowered Patreon team, Kurt Day. Kurt has a special mask that when he wears it displays floating emojis that reflect the mood of people around him, making it impossible for them to hide their true feelings. It's perfect for detective work. And we have Odin Gamble, whose mask is called the Karaoke Kisser. This mask has the ability to auto-tune his voice and adds backing vocals, turning any spoken sentence into a catchy song, complete with dramatic key changes. Thank you both for joining the fight to take over the world of independent audio fiction. You will get access to over 80 exclusive episodes a week early and ad-free. And this month's exclusive episode is Resumo Mortui. Actually, I don't know how to pronounce that. I think it's Resumo Mortui. And it's about two witches, Glissander and Ellie, as they break into a graveyard to practice a reanimation spell that they learned at school, only for the spell to backfire. It's written by James Fritz and narrated by Georgia Cook. And I have to say, I really like this story. So definitely go check it out if you can. And to do that, head over to patreon.com/hawkandcleaver or subscribe via Apple's premium subscription service, or just go to theotherstories.net/plus and I'll have all the information there. And for this month's volume opener, a man in the field, again, sorry, Dan in the field, is interviewing horror author David Viegertz. So, over to you, Dan.
Hey, it's me, Daniel Wilcox, and joining me this week in the Other Stories Writer's Chair, I've got the incredibly talented David Viegertz. David Viegertz is a disabled army veteran, a law enforcement veteran, a husband and a proud father. He's also a storyteller, an author of thrillers and horror novels that will keep you on the edge of your seat. His works include the Dead Things in Dark Places series, the Callow and Oakley FBI thrillers, as well as his 10-minute terror series available at reamstories.com. David, welcome to the Other Stories.
Dan, thanks for bringing me on, man. How are you?
I am very, very well, and I like the fact that we're going straight into pretending we haven't been chatting for like half an hour already. But my first question, I found a little part on your bio on your website, which I didn't actually read out in the intro, that says David would often be found dragging a backpack full of books to class, leaving his textbooks behind. And my question is, knowing what I know about you and how many books you tend to have on you at any point, how many backpacks did you break through?
Quite a few. I got in trouble a lot actually in school because I would go to the library, and especially when I was like reading the Harry Potter series, I would rent several. And I paid another classmate to rent to borrow from the school library the extra copies, because I could only check out one. And so I'd ask him to check it out for me, and then I'd carry that with me. And so I would be caught reading underneath the desk, and when the teacher would take that, I'd just pull out the other copy. And so
that's genius.
But yeah, I mean, and here's the thing: if I had known to this day that I was going to read as much as I did, or if it carried over at least until adulthood, I probably would not be where I'm at today. I would probably be in a lot of trouble with mountains full of books around me at all times. But you know what? It reminded me, you know, thinking about it now, thinking about that time, it was just, man, the obsession with reading. I wish it had carried over and it just continued. And for a long time, I stopped reading. And so thank you for bringing that up, because it's a great memory for me, just getting in trouble because of books. If I can get in trouble for one thing, it's because of books.
I'm finding more and more as I'm getting older, I'm starting to get weird memories of how much I did read as a kid. And like when people say to me, you know, where did your horror gene come from? I was always like, I've lived a very easy life. I've never really had any like trauma, you know, until adulthood. But like I only just in those memories go like, oh shit. And I was devouring Goosebumps at like age 9, because my son's age 9, and it's only now that he's reading all of his books, I'm like, shit, I was at Goosebumps at this point. What was your kind of introduction into horror as a reader?
So I remember browsing my parents. They had a little library. They weren't much on readers, but I remember browsing it, and there were a few classics and I guess you could say soft horror, but kind of there is Michael Crichton's Sphere. That was a great kind of a I guess it's got some horror type elements. I kind of classify more as sci-fi action versus anything, but that, and then I remember looking at this chunky book that had the worst cover on the planet, because it was like falling apart. It wasn't really a bad cover. It was just falling apart, and I couldn't understand. But it was a really easy title. It was It. And I was like, oh man, I'm like, I want to know what It is. And so I remember having this, my mom, and she was like, hey, you can't read this. So I'm like, well, clearly I am now. So I think she still has that old copy, but I remember pulling this book down and I saw how thick it was. And I was like, this is a challenge. I want to read this giant monster of a book. And I just remember it being so, it was too much for me at my age. Not because the concepts were too difficult to understand, but because it was like the Stephen King's writing, I just wasn't there yet. I was very young. And so I switched over to something more palatable that was not that book. And I switched over to Carrie. So that's also, so, but like you two, I was reading Goosebumps a lot. I read, a lot of Michael Crichton, especially when it came to like Jurassic Park and that sort of thing. And I know it's not classified as true horror, but it really is for a kid, when you're trying to edge into this realm where the intent behind the stories, I know we talked about the story intent between, you know, behind thrillers versus horror. When the intent is kind of blurred a little bit, like with Jurassic Park, and when you think about it, it's terrifying. You know, the idea that, and it's not the dinosaurs, it's just the fact that we as humans had such hubris that we're like, oh yeah, this is okay. Like we're going to splice together some genes and make dinosaurs. That's horrifying. But yeah, so that's, I think my introduction is probably a lot like everybody else. I mean, it's very, very similar where you start with Goosebumps, and then you know you get your horror movies in there, you know, and I'm a big fan of 80s and 90s horror movies, not so much the recent stuff. It just doesn't kick the same. I keep looking for, you know, hidden stuff that I hadn't seen yet. Goosebumps, Poe. I started reading a lot of Poe, but yeah, I mean, so that's, I mean, I guess that answers it. But I'm a universal reader, man. I'll read horror, I'll read fantasy. About the only thing I won't touch is romance, and that's just me. I'm not judging anybody who likes romance, but that's just not it doesn't interest me.
Yeah, well, we were saying just as we recorded, and you kind of alluded to it there, you know, there's a real difference between what we kind of consider as like true horror versus like just scarier stuff within other books. And I think you probably need that little gateway drug sometimes. Like sometimes people get that little like, ooh, from reading Jurassic Park, to then go, maybe I can try something scarier. Where do you kind of think, you know, that boundary falls on horror versus other genres that feature horror?
Yeah, probably like when we were talking about thrillers before, right? So the three I like to talk about are basically dark fantasy, horror, and thrillers, and where they lie. So if horror is all the way on the right, the in between, we're talking about in betweens where like that boundary starts to blur. You got fantasy, you got horror on the right, and then right in the middle you got dark fantasy. And so that's a perfect example. So you got dark fantasy, which is a blend of the fantastical elements. There's a hero with the hero story, and you still get the feel good from the action and the magic and the adventure. But in the end, the hero will come after the bad guy and will overcome. But there might be scary scenes and elements and moments of terror. But the intent behind the book is to give you an adventure. Versus and the character can go along that adventure, and you can put yourself in their shoes, and it's a great adventure. Game of Thrones is a perfect example of this because it is just gory and over the top, and there's some magic that is not a whole lot, but then you got weird chemicals, and then you got people with zombies and ice zombies and dragons. So it's a perfect blend of all that. But in the end, the hero does overcome. And that is the intent behind that, is that you're watching these stories of all these heroes that are just overcoming the monster one step at a time throughout many different monsters from many different points of view. With fantasy, there is no horrific element. You just try to keep it fantastical. It's fun. It's elevating. It's adventurous. It's Aragorn, right? And it's get on the dragon's back and ride it into battle and overcome, and the hero and the boy finds a dragon egg. That's your fantasy. But then, so you blend the two together, you get the dark fantasy with the horror elements, and then you get the horror. Horror is very specific. The intent of the character is just to survive. That's it. The hero can only survive. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. And that's where you get your different endings, right? I mean, so it's like, oh, what if the hero doesn't survive? What if he dies? Well, he's trying to survive, and he's normally trying to survive a situation that's outside of human control. And that's what makes it scary. That's why space horror is so incredible. Space horror and deep sea horror is just incredible for this, because it's so much we don't understand. And that's what really makes it intense, is because we don't understand it. We're trying to understand it. We can't understand it. And we don't have the time to understand it because something's trying to kill us. Mm. So space horror is a perfect example for it. And I think, and that's why I love to live. I love to live in the what ifs. I love to live in the what if this is beyond my comprehension? How am I going to overcome that? And the answer is you can't. You just have to survive.
I think that's one of those things that the more and more I'm trying to find new stories, you realize the trope about having mobile phones and technology not work in these kind of stories, because having that kind of global communication really makes it difficult to tell a story that's scary because you're automatically connected to stuff. So like, it makes sense that one of the biggest tropes in horror just generally is we're somewhere, but all the cell towers are down, everything's broken, you can't communicate.
Yeah. And so I love taking those ideas and be like, all right, so what if the cell phones work fine, but what if they're working against us?
Mm.
You know, and like, so I'm like, let's take that trope, let's flip it, right? And so it's like, man, I don't want to, like, I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to put in a story where the cell phones don't work, or if it's, you know, service is so good nowadays, it's hard to find places it doesn't work. And it's like, well, you don't want to magic it away. That's kind of lame. So you got to be clever about it, or have characters that basically dissuade themselves of the idea that, hey, I could just call for help and it's okay. So what do you do? And so I'm like, well, let's take the trope, let's flip it. So I'm like, I got this idea that it's been sitting with me for a long time of just like an AI type of horror. It's like, we're almost there, right? I mean, AI robots are there. I mean, it's coming. And it's and like, I'm like, I need a story where all this technology, where they have to get rid of it because it is working against them. And that just makes their situation worse. And I love the idea of it.
Definitely. Tell me a little bit about your writing journey, how you kind of started penning words and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, man, I was in fitness first. I was in fitness, and I'd always loved the idea of having a business. And so I was like, you know, let me backtrack a little bit. I broke my back in the Army. I'm not paralyzed or anything like that, but I've got an injury. And I did everything I could to learn about the human body, and that included being a personal trainer. And so I started that a little bit. I wasn't reading at the time. I stopped reading for like almost 15 years, unless it was necessary, like unless it was like for work or something like that, or the occasional, like I was going to school and I was finishing my master's and all that. So I read then, but not like joy reading. And so right around that time, I had this fitness business and I was just miserable. Like it made a lot of money, but it was vain and it was boring. And I remember I was with my wife and we're talking, and I was talking to her. She likes to ask questions about what was I like when I was younger. And I was like, well, I just had this idea. Like, she's like, what kind of jobs did you want? I was like, well, the first thing I wanted to be was a writer. She's like, a writer? I was like, yeah. Like, I always wanted to write a book. Like, I love the idea of having my name on the cover of a book, of a story, and people picking it and wanting to tell me about the adventure I took them on. And so, like, I read a lot of dark, you know, read a lot of fantasy. And so, I mean, I just imagine a crowd of people in a Barnes & Noble, and they were there to meet me and to read and to tell me about their favorite characters and all that. And but that fell apart because I realized, I'm like, this is a child's dream. Like, that's all it is. You can't get there. That doesn't exist. They're just these rarities, you know, these people that won the lottery and made it. And so I lost that dream. And so I went to other dreams and other careers that I had in mind. And so I went to the military because I wasn't cut out for college. And then, you know, I got the call from the Lord to become a police officer. And so I went to be in law enforcement. I met my wife. And around that time, I remember I was at my fitness business and I was training a client, and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had actually had a discussion with my wife, and she had told me, she was like, you talked about writing a book a long time ago. I was like, yeah. She goes, why don't you write the damn book? I was like, why? She was like, write it for yourself. Write it for you. Write it because you want to, and to say you did it, because if it was something you wanted to do as a kid, why not do it? And I was like, well, I don't know how to write a book. She goes, just figure it out. You figured out everything else. And it's like, just figure it out. Like, you know how to study. You know how to learn. Go learn how to write a book. And so I did. I stumbled on some coursework for another author who did a really good job of kind of putting into perspective. Because I realized then, too, is like, well, there's an opportunity here. I like business. I like my training business, but I don't like this business. So there's an opportunity. I'm like, why don't I sell my own books? And I looked into independent publishing. At the time, it had a very derogatory term. It was self-publishing, which is now we've kind of co-opted it and taken it back and said, no, this is a good thing, right? Self-publishing is a very good thing. And so now we call it independent publishing. But at that time, people called it self-publishing. And I said, well, I can just do it myself. This is not the lottery. This is business. This is good practice. This is meeting my customers. This is building, instead of waiting for that room full of people to come to me in a Barnes & Noble, I can gather them up myself and then tell them which Barnes & Noble to go to, and I'll meet them there. And I'm like, so I wrote one book with the intent to, and I wrote my first book in 30 days, and it was a dark fantasy series because I was reading dark fantasy. I was reading a lot of fantasy at the time, and I thought that's what I wanted to write. And my writing was stilted, and it was, to this day, people still love the series, but it's been edited like 3 times. And I thought that's where I wanted to be. But I just couldn't find a home there. I couldn't pick up other fantasy books to read. I kept going back to reading horror. And I was like, at that time, I got this obsession with reading again. So I was picking up book after book after book, and it just kind of came back to me. I remember this, that child that was dragging his backpack full of books. And I was like, oh man, if this feels like that again, it feels good. I don't have to play video games to enjoy myself. I can read books. I'm like, I totally forgot about these things. Like, where have these been my whole life? You know, you realize you come back to it. And, I was like, man, so I wrote that book. And then I was in a writing group. I started a writing group. There were six of us. We did that for about 4 years. And during this time, my co-authors, he was writing fantasy at the time, but he's also writing horror. He's like, hey man, you know, I've been reading your book, and you might want to try writing a horror novel. I'm like, I'm writing the third book in this series, man. Like, why am I? He's like, just try write a horror novel. And so I wrote a short story. He's like, now write a novel. I was like, all right. So I went and wrote it in like, I don't know, 60, 90 days, something like that. And by this point, it was like my third book. And so I was like pretty confident I could write another one. I'd written two. The second book was the hardest because it was like, oh man, I just finished the first one and I was ready to like scream it from the mountaintops. Like, look what I did, you know, and nobody cared. And so you write the second book, and you're like, oh no, damn it, I gotta write a third. And like, by the time you wrote the second one, you're like, oh, I can do this again. I've already done it twice, like the first hard, you know. So I skipped the third book, went to writing my first horror novel. He read it, he said, you're a horror author, congratulations. And so from that, it just blew up. I wrote I'm at 22 books now. I've written 4 thrillers I have contracts for, so I have traditional deals for those. I have another sci-fi that I wrote, a sci-fi adventure, because I love Gundam. Like, I love weird things like that, like just that are like outlandish for horror readers. It's like, yeah, I love Scream as much as the normal person, but I like Gundam too. I'm like, that's cool as shit. So I wrote a Gundam book, and I was like, you know. So anyways, I got a deal for that one too, but from a small independent press. But I mainly stuck to horror. I've got something like, I don't know, 15, 16 books in horror. And that's where I've been, and that's where I want to be. And on occasion, I'll put out another thriller. But for the most part, I like horror, and that's my history, man.
I also very much like the fact that, you know, along the journey, you've clearly had a couple of very influential, encouraging people. Like, you know, your wife sounds fantastic in that arena, as does this mystery author who pushed you into writing horror. Having that support, I know, like, makes a big difference when it comes to actually just getting this off the ground.
Yeah, if you can do one thing to help your author career that costs you zero money and is 100% beneficial to you and somebody else, it's start a writing group. Do that. Find 5 people, meet once a week, and critique a chapter from 2 different people. And get people from other genres, too. I mean, we had a romance, we had a young adult, we had a lit RPG, and we had a fantasy, and with 2 fantasies and one fantasy and 2 horrors. So that was our group. And we critiqued every week, and it was camaraderie, and we were friends, and we met up at 20 books. I mean, we were friends. And every week, we critiqued everybody's writing from a position of, we want to make this the best writing it can be instead of the best story that we want it to be. Mm-hmm. And so that was always our rule. It was like, we're going to be objective, not subjective. And so if you can do that, I mean, your writing will be elevated beyond anybody else's in just because you have the intent and you're getting outside opinions who want nothing better for you than to write a better story, instead of just be like, no, this is not the story I wanted to read.
I 100% agree with that. What to you specifically makes good horror? When you're reading a horror book, what is it specifically for David Viergutz that jumps out that you're attracted to when it comes to finding a good horror book?
Man, you've got to persuade me that the characters involved, you have to persuade me that they believe 100% that this is no doubt what's happening to them. If you don't have a character who's totally invested in the horror, they just dismiss it over and over again, then it's just a bunch of bad stuff happening to somebody. Horror's in the mind, right? That's where it comes from, is our perception. Like, here's the thing. I'm not afraid of very much in this world. There are 3 things, though, that I am terrified of. I'm terrified of black holes. Like, not just like the existence of them, and they could be there, but like, if you watch the old Star Trek movies, right, and even the new ones, the new Star Trek, and you see the ships coming through the black hole and that visualization of what that looks like, or even like you watch the Star Wars movies and you see the maelstrom of all those black holes and the big tentacle beasts that are through them, it is a horrifying idea that this thing is so powerful and it is so destructive that even light itself cannot escape it. That is the number one. I know it's possible because, you know, me as a person, I know it's possible. I know the science behind it. Not to any degree that I'm like an expert, but I'm like, I can understand. It makes sense, right? It's that, and it still happens, and it's still there, and there's nothing I can do about it. That is horrifying to me. The same thing happens with a tornado. I can look at it. I can see the damage it is doing. I understand that it's coming this way, and the only thing I can do is run from it. That is all. I mean, that's what makes things terrifying. And so characters have to have that. They have to have that. I believe this is possible. Either by, you know, they either have to dissuade themselves or others have to persuade them that it's happening. You have that in horror novels and movies all the time. You have the dismissive husband. Like, that's a trope, right? It's like, oh, honey, that's not really happening. It's just it's an old house. You know what I mean? it's like, oh, that's, I was like, oh, there's a spooky thing that just arrived behind me. I'm just going to keep moving on with my day. It's like, that's what happens all the time. But eventually you realize the spooky thing is chasing you. It's not just behind you. And it's like, that's when the character takes on, you know, they take on the fear. They're like, oh my gosh, that's really happening. Like, they have to accept that. And so a horror novel, it's got to have it. I want to see that light bulb moment when they're like, oh no, I really am being haunted. Like, I want to see that. But then I have, I mentioned two out of my three fears. I'll give you a third one. It's irrational. Give you the third one. I don't like old locomotives, like trains. I don't mind metros, the metro, the subway station, that sort of thing. I don't like trains, locomotive, coal-fired trains. I don't know why. They're horrifying. I won't touch them. I won't step foot on them. Bentley Little's The Burning is terrifying, because it's about this train that's traveling across the desert. Like, no, it's not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be on tracks. Like, why is it doing this? And so trains, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But it has to be like a locomotive. If it's just like a, just like your local Amtrak or whatever, that doesn't do
anything. Yeah.
Interesting. I love the whole point of irrational fears. My very, very rational fear, which luckily is kind of defunct because of technology advancements, is floppy disk drives. I really should, like, it's a weird one. I'm not going to go into like explain it, but like, I just, they make me very icky and uncomfortable. What are some recent horror books that you've read that you would recommend to our listeners?
Oh man. So if you haven't checked out Bentley Little, he's so palpable. Like, he's so, you can just, it's very easy to palatable, not palpable. Sorry. Palatable, very palatable for the average horror reader, for the average person. That's great. If you are into a little more modern horror, especially from the traditional side of things, I would probably look at S.A. Barnes. She's doing some really cool, she's doing some really cool things. She just released a space horror book. I'm kind of on a space horror kick right now. She's got Dead Silence, which is kind of like cave diving. And then she's also got, she just released a new space horror novel. I can't remember the name of it.
Ghost Station.
It's that one. Ghost Station. There we go. Yeah, it's downstairs in my living room, but I can't remember the name. So there we go. But also if you're into indie, like, indie still has a great place. Indie horror is amazing. The authors are great people. I mean, Duncan Ralston's doing great things. Let me see. Jay Bauer, good friend. So maybe I'm a little biased there. Jay Bauer's doing some great things as well. He's got The Terror Will of Falls, which is an awesome book based on the Eyebiter novels, which is an awesome. If you can do a good creature feature that's never been heard of before, Eyebiter, I mean, come on. There you go. So I like a good Adam Neville's great. Let me see. Oh, and I've got my personal favorite, like Nick Cutter. So if you're looking for like a good introduction, like, you notice I know named everything but Stephen King. So if you're looking for a good introduction, like, any one of those guys would bring you into horror and make you feel like, hey, this is a good place to start. And even if I don't like this one, I might like something else from the same author. So I just start there.
I love it. We are getting close to wrapping up. Just before we do, what is the most exciting thing for you in horror at the moment? And that's a pretty broad question, so take that where you may.
Sure. So for me, what I'm hoping, it's a kind of a big picture feel, but I actually like what AI is doing. And the reason what I like AI is taking out the mundane from our lives. And it is, what I think it's doing for a lot of us is drawing focus back into being human. And when people are allowed to be human, they're allowed to be creative and they're allowed to create more. And I'm just seeing this rise in indie horror specifically of just a return of the genre to its once great place where it was a mainstream. It was a mainstream catalog. Horror novels have always kind of been there, but they've been there in the background. And it's always been just Stephen King. I mean, if you go to any Barnes & Noble now, the majority of them have one rack and five of the shelves in the rack is Stephen King. It's like, well, you know, there's so much more out there. You're starting to see that those racks get bigger, right? You're starting to not just to see the Stephen King novels get increased, but there are more shelves. There are people realizing there's a market there and people are more willing to go after it. And there are people who are being introduced to it who have never read it before. And it's like that rise of horror again from is great. And I don't think it's anything largely philosophical. I just think that people are looking for more. They're looking for more of a human element. They're looking more to connect with people. And there's no other emotion out there that you can connect better with people than fear. Because even if you don't know somebody, is it really easy to, like, people might argue that romance is another close one that you could relate to people. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, you could love that person as a person, but you can't really love them if you don't know them, versus horror, where it's like, hey, if that scary thing is exactly the same type of terror for them as it is for me. And I think it's just so much more powerful. So people are, I think horror is connecting people. And I love that. And I love that AI has made, it's leveled the playing field where creativity is starting to be this thing that people are looking for more of. And so horror is no object to that. It's part of it. And I'm really excited to see what advancements also come about with AI that people might be able to start seeing movies now with their books, where before it's like you couldn't, you know, that's a pipe dream. That's a dream of a dream. It's one thing to sell a book to a publisher. It's another thing to get optioned for a movie. So it's just those technological advancements just become a really, really cool place to be around and just kind of watch it happen. It's like that transference from floppy disk to CD. You were like, what is this thing? I don't have to touch a floppy disk ever again.
That's so a bring out opinion.
But it's refreshing as well just to hear you talk about AI in that positive way, because, you know, there is understandably a big wave of fear around AI and the different things it can do and all that kind of stuff. And like, I get certain arguments, certain sides of it. Like, I'm very kind of in the middle playing with it, just seeing, you know, what can be done. But it is encouraging to see, you know, people speaking somewhat positively about it. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. In the end, it's not going to be two robots that are talking to each other to make a recording. It's going to be you and me on a video talking as people. In the end, humans will, I mean, not to be cliche, but humans will rise above. I mean, they always do, because we have something that they don't. And that's just, the same thing applies for art. The same thing applies for books. The same thing applies for music. The human element is the thing that connects us. It's not the content itself. It is the thing that is human. So go ahead and use your AI to pump out 1 million books. It makes no difference. You still have the struggles of every other author out there, which is selling a book and then maintaining your audience by writing a good book. So you can go ahead and pump out as many crappy AI books as you want, but in the end, your problem is still going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Where can we find out more about yourself and all that you're working on, David?
Sure. Easy place, davidvergoods.com. If you hang around for about 15 seconds, you'll get annoyed by a pop-up, which will give you 15% off of anything in my store. And it'll also give you one of my ebooks and audiobooks for free. So that's a great place to find me. It's where my podcast is hosted. That's where my shop is. That's where my ebooks are. And there's a contact form there if you want to reach out and talk to me. I answer all my own emails.
Perfect. And we'll put that link in the show notes. And I will say that I've received some goodies from you, and you have these little bookmarks. I don't know if they're on your website store or on the Ring one, but this is my favorite bookmark. I mean, I know people won't be able to see this. I will just describe it by saying it's a very, very cool bookmark.
Yeah. Solid steel bookmark. Yes. So that's a little, I think that's new. I don't think many people are doing that. So that's, my nightmare writers get it. So actually what I can tell people as well, if you go to my website and you type over the Nightmare Engine, it's one of the tabs, you can log in and actually join my subscription. And there you get one of these solid steel bookmarks for free, but also you get to join one of my stories. And so every single month, my nightmare writers meet with me. They're my closest friends and fans. And we write stories together. They give me the ideas, the characters, the locations, all that stuff. And they get a bunch of goodies in the mail too. So, yeah.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Cool. So with that, there's nothing left to say other than a huge thank you to David for joining us this week. And a massive thank you to you, the listeners, as always, for tuning in. Find out more about all that's going on with the Other Stories podcast over at theotherstories.net. And I will see you next time when we strap our next willing victim into the writer's chair. One more time from myself and from David. We will see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.